Welcome back to Perfect Takes. I'm your host, Stephen Patton, joined as always by my co-host and dear friend, Jake LaQuire. And before we got into the episode, we wanted to kind of send out our thoughts and prayers to the lives lost in the New Orleans incident and the several people that are injured and still in critical condition. What happened was awful, and I'm glad that people at the time realized that there were a lot more important things going on than football, and we're able to postpone the game, gave off the DeMar Hamlin vibes, like, hey, this is bigger than the sport right now. We need to take a moment for that. And I was really appreciative on the fact of New Orleans and the NCAA doing that.
Yeah, for sure. There are bigger things than football, right? I know we can get caught up in the middle of the season, like with, I guess with sports betting now, fantasy football, or just rooting for our teams, right? But there are more important things. And like you're saying, I'm glad that the NCAA took a step back, and I think it's the Caesars Dome now, that they took a step back and said, hey, let's give it a day and let's let everybody mourn and regroup before we put the product back on the field. So right decision by them, I think, truthfully there. And it's going to kick off here, Georgia versus Notre Dame. That is in about 30 minutes after we start recording. So we'll probably next episode, we might react to that. Who knows? Hopefully Georgia gets upset or something. We have something to talk about. But getting back to the NFL, back to football after that acknowledgement. On Tuesday, we talked about playoff implications, right? And more so the big game of the week, maybe the game of the year in Minnesota and Detroit battling for that first seed. But today, we're kind of looking forward at the other end of the spectrum. These are the teams that aren't fighting for playoff spots right now, but they're fighting for the futures of their organizations. And of course, I'm talking about like draft status, right? We're up there. We currently have the sixth pick, but there are a lot of other teams that probably want to lose this week, maybe secure their future QB, future star blue chipper type of player. And as you can see here, Steven has it posted for the YouTube people, like the implied odds for the non-playoff teams in the draft. And it looks like New England's got that first pick locked up. Drake May has been limited in practice this week, so we'll see who ends up playing there against Buffalo. I know Buffalo also wants to get Josh Allen on the field to protect the QB starter streak, kind of like how they used to do with Eli Manning before Ben McAdoo snatched him out for one game and put Geno Smith in there. Rightfully so, because Geno gave him a better chance to win. But yeah, that's kind of setting the stage for what we're going to talk about today. I don't know if you want to talk about anything else, Steve, before we get into it, but the first game on the docket is actually the first game of the week. That Saturday, what is it, 4:20, 4:30 game between Cleveland and Baltimore. And as you can see, Cleveland on this thing is projected the number 2 overall pick. They currently hold on to the 3rd overall pick, and they're going to Baltimore. And Baltimore has something to play for. So I'm not sure Cleveland is going to be a victor in the game. Or, yeah, just overall, I think they're going to hover right around that 2 or 3 draft pick there. What are your thoughts on that game in particular?
Yeah. No, before we get into this, the visual that's being shown for anybody watching on YouTube is from Doug Analytics. Phenomenal chart building, has looked into a lot of draft implications recently. Being a Giants fan, the Giants holding potentially a top 5 pick in this year's draft. Obviously, their win last week against the Colts kind of moved them out of a top 3 pick. I'm sure that there's a couple scenarios where they climb back into that, and we'll talk about it. But like you said about the Patriots that hold the number 1 pick, Drake May doesn't play. Even if it's the Bills backups that the Patriots see, they're so banged up and their roster is devoid of talent to where it's a possibility that the Bills backups beat the Patriots starters. And we'll see what happens on Sunday. But if that happens, New England locks up the number 1 pick. And like you said, it's looking like the Browns are going to lose on Saturday, since they're down to their 3rd string quarterback, and they're going up against a team that is arguably a top 5 team right now in the league, 2nd or 3rd best team in the AFC, depending on what you're looking at. And to me, that just shows just the talent disparity again. And it seems like we're seeing some maybe jumps that people can climb into pick wise. I think that starts at pick 3 that the Titans currently hold and are projected to have at the end of week 18. Where do you think about that game? how do you feel about their matchup with do they play the Jaguars? No, they play the Texans.
Titans. They play Houston. Yeah. Well, real quick with Cleveland, like you're talking about, the talent disparity is just huge, right? On one end, they have DTR, the second year QB, who isn't playing, I think, to his full potential. I don't think they're playing super well. I think he still has zero passing touchdowns, and it's up to 9 or 10 interceptions now, so not ideal there. And on the other end, they have Lamar Jackson, who might be the MVP, might be the runner-up, and just a host of Pro Bowlers. They announced the Pro Bowl list today, and I think the Ravens have 8 or 9 people. Maybe some of them are like the reserve guys, but total, they have quite a large number of representatives on their team. They have a good fan base getting the fan votes, but certainly a much stronger team than the Browns. I think Cleveland does end up losing that game. And we kind of want Cleveland to win for us to be able to move up as high as we can. I just don't see it. But then you're talking about the next team that currently has the number 2, but could move back to 3 or 4. That's the Titans. And they're going up against the Texans like you're talking about. And while the Ravens have something to play for against the Browns, they can still, I guess, lose the division if I think they can still lose it if Pittsburgh wins. Yep. And they lose, and some other stuff might happen there. But certainly they want to lock up that win and have the home field advantage in the first round. The Texans don't have much to play for, right? They're stuck in that number 4 seed. Nothing they do is going to knock them out of it. They've already won their division. Their division's quite bad this year, and they can't win 4 games in 1 week to move past some of the other teams. So maybe they want to rest their starters, have everybody healthy going into the playoffs, or maybe they want to play their starters and try to galvanize an offense, which has been quite poor over the last month and a half, something like that. The Texans offense hasn't been putting out the high numbers that we saw last year, even that we saw in the beginning of this year. And maybe the Titans are the type of get right team that they want to be able to beat before heading into the playoffs, so that they're like kind of riding not a high necessarily, but a good winning streak going into where I think they're going to match up with the Steelers, I would assume so, or the whoever loses between the Steelers and the Ravens, that's going to be their opponent in round 1. And that's a huge step up from the Titans. So maybe they want to lock in and get this one and be like, all right, we're ready for whatever team comes into Houston for this matchup here.
Yeah, no, we're going to see what's going to happen in terms of starters. The Titans, obviously, Mason Rudolph, it looks a little bit more capable than Will Levis at the helm, especially the sack ratio is night and day compared to Will Levis, who is towards the bottom of the league with guys like Caleb Williams and Jalen Hurts. Mason Rudolph also has a tendency to avoid negative plays. And sometimes that is usually the biggest correlation with quarterback play and wins, is not losing the game and allowing the team to kind of put its best foot forward in an attempt to win a game. And like you said, you're going up against the Texans backups. This is an opportunity to win a game. So why they have a high probability of potentially getting the second or third pick, if they win, they're probably going to fall to about pick 5 or 6. So that is kind of the difference, the delta between a win and a loss for the Titans on Sunday. But this is one of the few teams, I would say, in the top 5 that have a good chance of winning their game. If the Patriots had Drake May, with how close they played the Bills the first go round, I would actually be taking the Patriots in that game. But if Drake May is not out, it's Jacoby Brissett. You have that banged up offensive line, the banged up defense by the Patriots. I wouldn't bet on them this coming Sunday.
For sure. I think that the Titans are one of the teams in front of us that could help us out there, maybe get that win. And I believe that their strength of schedule is higher than ours, which is actually a good thing if you want a higher pick. That would mean if we have the same record, we would jump ahead of them. There's a whole breakdown with strength of schedule that determines tiebreakers and stuff. We'll get more into that when we get to our own game that we'll go over. But yeah, I think the Titans do have a solid chance there. The next team on the list would be the Browns, which we already talked about. So the next one up is the New York Giants, and they're going to Philly. And the Giants are coming off of a big win, an emotional win where they just curb stomp the Indianapolis Colts. I believe it was in New York. It was, because it was in front of all the fans and everything. Now they're going to a division rival who's not going to have Saquon Barkley. And if that's going to hold for like the rest of the roster, we can assume that A.J. Brown might not play a lot. Devontae Smith. They just reactivated Dallas Goedert, so I'm not sure if he's going to play. Jalen Hurts, I believe, still has the concussion, so don't know if he's going to play either. I think Philly might be resting some people, so this could give the Giants an opportunity to get another win. And while the fans are probably a bit fed up with that win, considering that they were in Shedeur Sanders, Cam Ward, or even Travis Hunter territory, the people in the organization, they're coaching for their jobs, right? The players are playing for paychecks, so they don't really care about tanking or anything. And for a guy like Brian Daboll, who I think we can both agree is probably on the hot seat here, I think this would be a good win, a statement win for him and the rest of his staff to go into Philly, the division champs, and to take one away from them at the end of the season.
Yeah, and I know a lot is going to be made about draft position, but I think a good argument could be made that some of the better quarterbacks in recent draft classes haven't necessarily gone first overall. This past year, Caleb Williams goes one, hasn't looked the part. Jaden Daniels, Drake May look the part. So just because you don't have quarterback one or maybe even quarterback two doesn't mean that you aren't going to be able to find the guy in this year's draft class. My question for you, and I haven't been keeping up to date since we haven't gotten full draft mode, is Drew Allar staying another year at Penn State or is he declaring? Okay, it's, I was about to say.
It's interesting enough, all of the quarterbacks that like could have gone back have, and all these guys that I think are have higher ceilings than guys like Cam Ward and Shedeur Sanders. Drew Allar goes back to Penn State. We'll see him play later on in the playoff here. Garrett Nussmeier at LSU, who's kind of up and down, but his highs are quite high. He's going back another year. I don't know about Quinn Ewers. I wouldn't call him like the high-end talent, but he put on a show in the second half of yesterday's game. Reports are he's got a $6 million NIL offer somewhere, so he might go back and take that because I don't think he's going to get the, what would it be, a top 12 salary to eclipse a $6 million figure in year one. Who knows about that one? Cade Klubnik at Clemson, I think, is a sleeper guy who could have been QB3 or even QB2. He's also going back. So the pickings are slim. The cabinet is almost.
We're here at Menards Bank Sale, asking shoppers what they're putting in the bag to get 15% off.
Paint,
batteries,
tools,
toilet paper,
extension cords, grocery items,
hardware for my cabinets,
snack items, crackers, and some canned goods stuff,
shop vac supplies,
toothpaste, cereal, coffee, dog treats. I've got a lot of stuff to grab.
The list goes on, but the sale ends January 24th. Hurry in for Menards 15% off bag sale. See store for complete details.
Save big money at Menards.
Empty for the QB needy teams. Reminds me a lot of the Kenny Pickett year. And I think I would have both Sanders and Ward slightly above Pickett just on their physical traits alone. But this certainly isn't a year where it's like, oh, I got to have this kind of guy, right? This isn't going to be like even the Goff and Wentz year. And while both of those guys were rated quite high, we saw teams trade up before the draft to position themselves at 1 and 2. Not sure if we're going to see that this year, especially for a Giants team where if they can get some stuff out of Drew Lock or maybe get some stuff out of a free agent they pick up next year, maybe they're content with writing it out with a Mason Graham or an Abdul Carter or one of the offensive tackles since their line is quite banged up.
Yeah, and I would be very interested to see. Jim Mora obviously made his remarks regarding Saquon Barkley going to the Eagles and how that would make him feel. I think it would be in his best interest instead of blowing it up this year and having this expectation on a new GM, new head coach, to now go find your guy, is that you give Joe Schoen and Brian Daboll one more year to lay in the bed that they made. And yeah, maybe let Drew Lock take the reins. Like if he looks good against Philadelphia, maybe in the offseason you pick up somebody else in free agency that have a little bit of competition, but you just draft best player available. You try to rebuild on both sides of the ball, get it to where you are in a position to take a quarterback. And if things aren't necessarily gelling next year for them, that's okay. The Giants, if this is a year where you're going to have guys like Drew Allar, the kid out of Clemson, the LSU guy,
Nussmeier.
Nussmeier. Okay, yeah.
You got Lord of the Rings. On the rain. Yeah.
There we go. It's, the first few letters are the same, but that's where like my process goes with the Giants. Also, Archie Manning could declare next year.
Yeah.
I don't know if he will, but you have that connection with Eli Manning. And so Jim Mora, if he's a patient enough owner, I think he lets Brian Daboll, Joe Schoen do their thing, and then he just restarts. and you don't know who necessarily be available the next coaching cycle. You could still have a guy like Joe Brady who's next in line and you could hire to come in and run a very good offense with a rookie quarterback and rebuild it that way. So I don't know exactly the direction the Giants should take, but like you said, it's not a really top heavy quarterback draft, and going best player available for the Giants, whether they pick at pick three or they fall out of the top five, I think is in their best interest.
Yeah, I'm 100% in agreement with you here. I actually think they have a chance to pull off this game, given how they played last week. And I'm not going to say they're going to put up 45 or 48 or whatever it was again, but I think they have a solid chance if the Eagles are resting their starters in preparation for a deep playoff run like they hope. I believe the Eagles are guaranteed the 2 seed no matter what happens this yep. weekend, which would mean that they would likely get Green Bay, I think, would be their likely
opponent. It depends on the Washington-Green Bay game. And, like, Washington could rest their starters. They aren't right. playing at home. They can't play at homes.
And so as far as Green Bay and Chicago goes, it's been – I wrote it down here in the notes. It's been since 2018 that Green Bay – like, that was the last time they lost in Chicago. So who knows, like, who the Eagles matchup is going to be there. But I think they're going to rest on their laurels and just get ready for the playoff run. So could certainly see the Giants pulling this one off as well. And then, like you're saying, as far as the future goes for them, I'm absolutely with you. If there's a chance that you could get any of the people you mentioned – or Arch Manning, maybe the Tennessee guy as well. I believe Lenore Sellers, the South Carolina QB as well, who is probably going to be a Heisman favorite next year. I believe he could enter too. There's a lot of this draft is kind of pales in comparison, not only QB heavy, but like top heavy in general. I think next year is going to have a good bit more talent for people to choose from there. But that's number four with the Giants. The next team up is the last team that's in front of us in the draft picture. That is the Jacksonville Jaguars. And they also, I think, have an opportunity to help us out here, get a win, and push themselves behind us should we lose. And they're playing an Indianapolis Colts team that kind of got shellacked last week. We just talked about it with the Giants, and we're talking about how Brian Daboll, if his job is on the line, he's going to need to coach hard for it. Doug Peterson, this is somebody we predicted throughout the season that would be out of there. His job certainly has to be on the line, especially with the rumors that Ben Johnson might prefer Jacksonville if they can get rid of Trent Baalke and start over there. If he can put on like a masterclass performance, do you think that would convince the owners, Shad Khan, the owner, could that convince him to keep him around a year longer? Or what's your vibe with Jacksonville here? And how do you have them stacking up in this game with the Colts?
I think they definitely have the ability to upset the Colts. They did in Jacksonville a couple of years back when Frank Reich was the Carson Wentz was the quarterback, and the Colts choked then. Similarly, that choked over the past couple of games. What I think is important to note about the coaching decision that's going to come in the offseason for the Jaguars, their owner is a very patient owner. However, I think his patience with Doug Peterson and the way he's gone about this team, he's done with. I mean, some of the comments early on in the season, I thought were pretty damning when you're like, well, the players just got to go make the plays. And it's like, I don't know. I'm looking around the league and I'm seeing a lot more easier concepts, easier reads, easier completions, easier yards than what I'm seeing on the field in Jacksonville. And obviously, there were some drop issues that caused them a couple games early on in the year that kind of impacted their trajectory. But this is a scenario where you were talking about with Trent Baalke potentially being gone, Ben Johnson has requested, apparently, allegedly, that if he's going to get hired, there's a general manager he has in mind that comes with him. And so I think Jacksonville with a clean slate, with Trevor Lawrence locked up long-term, Brian Thomas, a young budding star wide receiver, a talented, dynamic running back duo in Travis Etienne and Tank Bigsby, I don't know. It's got some Detroit vibes if he's able to refix that line. And so, honest to goodness, why a lot of people think Ben Johnson's going to go to Chicago, maybe he's a dark horse for the New England Patriots, I really think it's Jacksonville that we need to be talking about, because I think Omar Khan will hand over the keys to Ben Johnson. And I don't know how many of these other owners are really okay doing that.
For sure. We know he's not was averse to hiring some of the bigger name coaches. He's the guy who took Urban Meyer. You know, obviously that didn't work out. I think he was almost too patient on that one. He should have gotten him out of there after like the second week he his plane touched down in Jacksonville. But as far as the now for Jacksonville goes, I think you're right. I think Doug Peterson is a lame duck coach as it is. They're already down to Mac Jones, and while he hasn't played the best, neither has Trevor Lawrence this year, they've won the same amount of games. So over the last six or so games, they've been able to string some things together. And it's the players actually making the plays, more so Brian Thomas Jr. than anybody else, that's gotten them this far. I think they have a chance in this one. And not only is it just because that they seem to be clicking at a not 32nd through 30th level in the league right now, but I think on the other side with the Colts, they have some turmoil going on there as well. I don't know if Anthony Richardson's going to play this week. He didn't play this past weekend. There was a piece in The Athletic that came out today where some of the players, in particular, it was DeForest Buckner, said, one of the reasons I signed an extension here, talking to Richardson, one of the reasons I signed an extension was because of you. Like, I believe in you, but you have to step up now. Like, it's your time to take over. And there are a lot of other comments like that. And if the players inside the locker room are talking like that, I'm not sure it bodes well for the future of Anthony Richardson in Indianapolis, excuse me, especially considering we had the whole like tired incident earlier in the year. And he's just been banged up throughout the duration of his 2-year tenure in Indy. What's your outlook on Richardson's kind of future with the team? Or if there's not one there, do you see him sticking around somewhere else in the league?
I think leading up to the draft when Richardson was taken, I fell in love with his traits, saw the Cam 2.0, saw the raw prospect that Josh Allen was touted coming out of Wyoming. But Trey Lance and now Anthony Richardson, they didn't have necessarily a lot of games underneath their belt in college just because of COVID, injuries, different circumstances that came up. And that impacted what we saw at the professional level. And so a lot of scouts fell in love with these traits. And at the end of the day, he just isn't cut out for this position. Like I just mentioned, I saw the Cam 2.0. He's not nearly as tough as Cam was. I mean, Cam would get rocked and he'd be back to the huddle and it'd be next snap. To call out that you're tired, like that's an unforgivable offense. And then these injuries that keep piling up. I mean, Bryce Young gets hit. Guy hasn't been out for a season-ending injury. Richardson's been out for what, three in his career over the past?
Even going back to high school, he was quite injured.
And it's just, you can't, your body can't hold up against the NFL professionals. You aren't good when you are on the field. And it's just creating this issue now within the Colts organization of, okay, where do you go? You almost have to restart with another journeyman like they did back when Frank Reich was first hired and they brought in Jacoby Brissett. Well, they had Jacoby Brissett, but then they bring in Phillip Rivers, trade for Carson Wentz, just go through this kind of
Matt Ryan
turnstile. Well. And that, I mean, that's what did it. It's like eventually you hit on that one quarterback and Falcons are learning the hard way with Kirk Cousins where it's just the guy isn't who he once was. The game has not... I wouldn't say the game has passed them, but their physical body is no longer able to compete at this level.
They're not LeBron James, who just turned 40 a couple of days ago and is still getting up there for some dunks. And to your point about Josh Allen as well with Anthony Richardson, I think you're right. I think they were similar prospects in terms of traits. But the difference was Josh Allen didn't miss time his rookie year or even his sophomore year. He was allowed to go out there and, to his credit, fail but over and over get better and better to the player he is today, where I think he's the odds on favorite to win the MVP. Like, to get to this point, he was able to stay on the field and learn from his mistakes, play through them. And eventually they built a team around him and helped take that team to the heights where it is now. The Colts didn't have that opportunity with Richardson being off the field. And yeah, it's unfortunate because he has the traits. And I think if he can put his mind to it, I think he would have the drive to take a team that far. But I think, like Trey Lance, it's going to be with another organization in the near future. I think the Colts probably are done there. I think Chris Ballard is also probably done because I think this was his last hurrah after finding all the veteran QBs. They finally get the rookie. didn't really work out. I think they're going to have to do it from the ground up, I think. And Jim Irsay is a reactionary person. So I think another season like this, and he's pretty prone to tear it down and build it back up. But as far as the now goes, I think the Jags have a good chance to win this one. And that makes it the Titans, Giants, and Jags with possibilities to win the games this week. And if we lose, I think that could propel us all the way up to third place in the draft. Is that going to happen? Is it super likely? No, it's probably a 1% or 2% chance, but never tell me.
We're here at Menards Bag Sale, asking shoppers what they're putting in the bag to get 15% off.
Paint,
batteries,
tools,
toilet paper,
extension cords, grocery items,
hardware for my cabinets,
snack items, crackers, and some canned goods stuff,
shop vac supplies,
toothpaste, cereal, coffee, dog treats. I've got a lot of stuff to grab.
The list goes on, but the sale ends January 24th. Hurry in for Menards 15% off bag sale. See store for complete details.
Save big money at
Yachts, right? That's what Han Solo says. So as far as the Panthers moving up, I'll believe it when I see it. But those are all the teams in front of us. There are also some other teams inside the top 10 that have games with a lot on the line in terms of draft position. One of them being the New York Jets. They're right after us at number 7, and they actually host the Miami Dolphins this week. Don't know if Tua's going to play, and I think the Jets offense actually has played much, much better over the last month than it did at the start of the year, disregarding the Buffalo Bills game. But I think Rodgers might have found a little bit there, but this could also be Rodgers' last game in the league. What are you thinking? How do you think that game's going to turn out when the Dolphins go up to New Jersey?
They fell apart against the Bills. I mean, it was a close game for the first little bit. It was a contest, and then once the dam burst, it was gone. I mean, when the backup quarterback is throwing a massive touchdown pass on a screenplay, like, that's insane. Like, that's – and it's just at that point you realize that the locker room has been lost. These guys are getting ready for the offseason. The players that know they're going to get retained, they're doing their thing. I mean, they're going to go out. They're going to play that last game, but they don't have anything to play for. The Dolphins do have something to play for, and so I think because of that – Dolphins will
the chances are still there for the Dolphins to get that last wild card.
I think the only thing they need to have happen, because the Colts are out of the picture and they're ahead of the Bengals in the like totem pole, is if the Broncos somehow lose to the Chiefs, then and Miami they wins, would be, I think Miami right. is the seventh seed. But if for some reason the Jets pull off a miracle, the Chiefs backups beat the Broncos, which that would be hilarious. I think a lot of people that have been touting Bo Nix as offensive rookie of the year would be eating a lot of crow in that instance. And then you would have a Joe Burrow victory against – are they playing the Steelers?
They play the Steelers on Saturday. So the way it's set up is that they're the night game on Saturday. So – they'll know, the Steelers, that is, if Baltimore wins, like, all right, we're not winning the division, but they'll still have something to play for, like pride and everything. Mike Tomlin's never going to have his team lay down at the end of the season. And if anything, it's to kick your division rival Bengals out of the picture. But if the Bengals pull off that win on Saturday night, then they have to wait all day because both the Dolphins game and the Chiefs and Bengals, or excuse me, Chiefs and Broncos game, those are the 4:30 games. So the Bengals would have to wait almost a full 24 hours to learn if the other teams did enough to put them into the playoffs. So the Dolphins, however, they'll know instantly. Like if the Bengals lose, they're like, all right, it's just us. We got to win, and the Chiefs got to take care of business. So there are some storylines at stake there. And yeah, you're right. They have a chance to get into the playoffs. Maybe Tua comes back during a playoff run and they finally figure out the early year, because it's not December anymore, early year, cold weather, all that kind of stuff. But I agree with you. I think the Dolphins are going to pull this one off. And you talked about how the Jets are losing the locker room, losing the camaraderie there. Some of the Garrett Wilson stuff recently has been almost off the chain. Like, he's talking about he isn't getting enough targets. His targets are like 2 air yards and stuff like that. Maybe he's a guy that gets moved in the offseason. We talked about how they might have to tear it down. Maybe he's the piece that they move. Who knows? But certainly this is a – what's the word? It lacks the splendor of how Aaron Rodgers got there, like all the pomp and circumstance, none of that's here now at the end. And it might be the end of Aaron Rodgers' career here, this final game in New Jersey, not New York, because they play in East Rutherford. But, there is one more game with potential there. It's the Raiders and Chargers. The Chargers have made it into the playoffs, so unless they want to finagle and move around what seed they're going to be between, I think they're stuck at 6 and 7. They might rest their starters, and like so many coaches we've talked before, if Antonio Pierce is coaching for his job, they're going to be looking to win this game to get to 5 wins to end the season here. The Raiders are sitting at the 8th overall pick. How do you view this game? You think the Raiders have a chance here? Like, what's on your mind there?
So, and I'm going to say this because we saw it a couple years ago. Bills, I think, were they the number one seed, number two? Maybe it was before the 7th seed, but it was when the Bengals went to Buffalo and Buffalo got absolutely shellacked, just taken to the woodshed.
You're talking about playoffs?
Yeah, in the playoffs a couple years ago.
Mm-hmm. And in the snow. That was a good game.
Yeah, it was a very fun game to watch. But what intrigues me about that is that a team that I think could match up very well with the Bills are the Los Angeles Chargers. Now, we already saw the Chargers and Ravens play earlier in the year. The Ravens absolutely took it to Los Angeles. It's funny because the Chargers are almost like the Baltimore light. They bring in Joe Hortez. They bring in all the running backs between J.K. Dobbins and Gus Edwards. They bring in old-time Ravens with their center.
Greg Roman as well.
Well, Greg Roman, the offensive coordinator.
Bradley Bozeman, yeah.
Bradley Bozeman, Hayden Hurst, just all these guys from that culture. And we also saw what Baltimore did to Buffalo earlier in the year. And it's just that concept that the Chargers can get bigger on offense, kind of bully and dominate their way in the trenches. And obviously the Bills have a good defensive line, so nothing's a given necessarily there in that matchup. But what's interesting is Jesse Minter has been a genius this year. Coming from Michigan, he's almost like Mike McDonald 2.0. And I feel like with Josh Allen and the Bills, Josh Allen, if you can contain him, and I think they can match up well across the board, it could be a long day where they're putting Josh Allen into some very questionable circumstances and maybe some old ugly traits rear its head in a playoff game. So if I'm the Los Angeles Chargers, all this roundabout saying preview on matchup that may not happen in the first round is that if I'm the Chargers, I'm resting my starters, I'm getting ready for that matchup and hoping that I'm the 7th seed and that the Broncos, I think, would then have to jump them in order for the Chargers.
To beat the Chiefs,
Yeah, and so if the Broncos beat the Chiefs, which is more than likely to happen, you lose and you play the Bills, I think that's the matchup. Because if they go to Baltimore, Chargers aren't advancing past the first round. You can book it here. And that's what I think the coaching strategy needs to be, to get to the next round, to get that moral boost, play a team that you have a good matchup against.
Yeah, and I think the Chargers defense can do a good job containing Josh Allen as well. They're a really good run defense. We saw early in the year. And I think they could match up if they keep Josh Allen behind the line of scrimmage. Like, make him move around and get to the throws, because they also have a very good secondary with a lot of their rookie DBs, the Chargers, that is.
Yeah.
So I think it could be a good matchup there. Knowing us, it's going to be like the Bengals get the 7th seed or something, and the Chargers have to go play Baltimore, which, like you talked about, we already saw how that turned out. It's because Lamar and the staff there and the team there, they know everything about these guys. They just employed the defensive coordinator last year, essentially same system, so they know how to beat it. As far as this game goes, I could see them resting the starters there, getting ready for the playoff push. But the Raiders are pesky. We saw what they did to the Chargers at the end of the year last year. It was that 63-10 or something bizarre like that. Granted, Herbert was the QB. Why
Pierce got the head coaching job was because of that shellacking.
That's true. That's true there. And again, he could be a guy coaching for his job. The rumor is Mike Vrabel might want the Raiders job. So who knows there? I don't think the Raiders have the horses to win if the Chargers play their starters, but an interesting one to say the least. Final thing I'll say on them, the Giants jumped from the first pick to the 4th pick in the draft with that win. the Raiders were actually up there earlier in the year, actually a couple of weeks ago, and some wins have knocked them down to the 8th overall pick. That's just the, I guess, the consequences of winning late in the season if you have a bad record. But I'm sure the players enjoy the winning much, much more than, oh, hey, we might get replaced by a high draft pick in the spring there.
I think I lost you there. I might have frozen out or glitched, but it sounds like you were still going, so hopefully it uploads on your end.
Yeah.
I don't know.
I made my point. I made my point.
All right, perfect. Hopefully it recorded on your end. We get it. I don't, the Wi-Fi that we've been on has been a little flickery the past two times we've recorded, but to move on past kind of the Chargers Raiders game and the implications, I think it's a good time to talk about J.C. Horn being the only Carolina Panthers player with a Pro Bowl nod. That I could obviously change. I think if the Eagles get in, Saquon goes to the Super Bowl, that Chuba Hubbard might be a guy that steps in as a replacement. But again, I think he was shut down on IR, so I don't think he would necessarily go to that or accept that. But it is very interesting to consider. And then when you get into the nuts and bolts of just how many people are missing, I don't even know if J.C. Horn's playing in the season finale, but missing going into the Atlanta Falcons game. And I think that's the big thing we need to touch on before getting out of here.
For sure. Shout out to J.C. Horn. This was the first time he played all 15 games, I believe, to start the year. Missed last week, might not play this week. That's the most he's played in a season so far. That was one of my takes in the offseason, that he would play 13 or more because that was his previous high. He's shown how dominant he can be, and the Panthers fan vote was obviously not super high, especially amongst other fan bases across the league. So this just shows that it was the other players and the other coaches that voted J.C. Horn in. They understand how good of a player he is. So cool to see somebody representing the Panthers in the Pro Bowl game should he choose to go. But at least he got the Pro Bowl nod, and that certainly will be good for him when he's doing his contract extension negotiations this offseason here. But then you get to the Atlanta Falcons game, like you're talking about. As far as draft position goes, we currently hold the number 6 pick. We talked about all the other top 10 teams, except for the Bears and the Saints. Whatever with them. We've talked about the Bears ad nauseum over the last couple months on this podcast. But the Panthers versus the Falcons, we remember what happened last time. It was Andy Dalton versus Kirk Cousins. It was Tyler Algier and Bijan Robinson both going for over 100 to finally put us away after Andy Dalton threw one of the most bizarre picks on a concept, one of the most bizarre concepts that Dave Canales drew up all year. And that kind of put the game away. But now we have Bryce Young. We have Michael Penix Jr. It's the young guns, as you alluded to, maybe at the start of the pod, maybe before we were recording. Don't remember. But two very different teams than they were when they met in week 6 when they came to town. So a lot different and a lot on the line for the Falcons, because if the Bucs do lose, if the Saints pull it off and the Falcons win, they get into the playoffs. So they will have something to play for. But given how the stats show Michael Penix played on Monday and his others, or excuse me, on Sunday night and his previous start, I don't know if it's going to be as smooth sailing as it was when Kirk was here and his arm was still working. He was able to throw passes in that game before it deteriorated. So what are your overall thoughts on this game? Do you think we have a chance in this one?
I think they'd just be smart handing it off, putting Michael Penix in some advantageous situations when he drops back. Pretty much passes and
Shop the Sherwin-Williams winter sale and get 30% off paints and stains January 9th through the 19th. Whether you're refreshing your interior or exterior, we've got the colors to bring your vision to life. And with delivery, getting everything to your door is easier than ever. Shop online or visit your neighborhood Sherwin-Williams store. Click the banner to learn more. Retail sales only. Some exclusions apply. See store for details. Delivery available on qualifying orders.
Needs that you feel comfortable with his arm making, because I think the issue is, and we talked about Anthony Richardson earlier, I think a large issue with some of his misses and even drops is just how hard he throws it. Like, it's a rifle. It's very similar to how Brett Favre, Matthew Stafford, Cam Newton, any of these big arm quarterbacks would just like rifle a ball in. With Michael Penix, it's not that he has the rifle. It's just he throws at this just same velocity. And you see it in the Commanders game where it's just, you got to put some touch on it. It's got to kind of drop in there. And that's what makes Russ so famous with his moon balls. And we've even seen it this year with Bryce Young, just some of the touch passes. I mean, the one to David Moore against the, no, it wasn't the Cardinals. It was a team with red on their uniform. I was like, it wasn't the most recent. That was the last game we played. But against the Cardinals at home, I mean, just a drop of a pass. And I don't think Michael Penix has that in his toolbox. So if Ezero Evero is able to kind of get him into some of those situations, we might be able to take advantage of that. But for me personally, I think Zach Robinson's just got to stick to running the ball. We can't stop that. And then on defense, just play sound fundamental football. Even if Bryce Young scores 2-3 touchdowns, more than likely you're going to rack up 30-plus points on this defense. So it's just, I think, keep everything in front of you on defense, run the ball on offense, and let the cards fall how they do. For the Panthers to, like you said, make this a game, you got to have a couple turnovers. That's the only way you stay in this game, because without Chuba Hubbard, you're asking Bryce Young to pretty much win this game. And he's capable of doing that. It's just a lot to put on one person's shoulders to do so much. You're offsetting so much on the offense right now. With Xavier Legette, is he even practicing right now with his wrist injury?
He is. Well, he played in Tampa and didn't play super well, to say the least. Maybe he takes the last game off to nurse the injury. Who knows? But it's interesting you point that out, because while I think Bryce is capable of winning games, he has to score 35 to get there, right? If the Panthers have an opportunity to allow 500 points against the defense this year, I think it would only be the sixth team to ever do that. And I think if the Falcons get 115 or something rushing yards, we allow over 3,000 rushing yards, which if you read Mike Kay's column on the Charlotte Observer, I believe we would be the 11th team since the merger to allow that. And those are very, very bad numbers, like historically bad defensive numbers. And like we're talking about, you got to put up 35 to win. Look at the Cardinals game. We had to take it to overtime to score 36 to win that game. The Buccaneers game, it was over 40. It could have been 50, but Todd Bowles decided to put Kyle Trask in and say, you know what, Dave Canales, you're my guy. You're on my staff last year. Here you go. Here's not a 50 burger to end the season. And so we just can't overcome that. That's what it comes down to me. And I think we will end up losing this game, even though I think we're going to try to win it. I don't think we're going to bench starters or anything. But yeah, I think the Falcons will get the win here. And then it's just going to have to come down to, can Spencer Rattler and the Saints do a solid for the Falcons and knock off Tampa Bay? The way Tampa Bay played last week, I do not see that happening. So I think Tampa Bay is going to lock up that final playoff spot. And I think the Panthers will lose the game here on Sunday.
So what's interesting to note is two of our worst losses this year have come on the road against our division opponents. And this is a rabbit trail, but it kind of came to mind is that Dave Canales kind of put out there like, oh, well, this division's a tough division. The NFC South the year 2025 of our Lord, you're saying the NFC South is a tough division.
It's tough for us.
We need to talk about when you're getting blown out, when the other team, your division opponent that is getting slapped around by other teams all across the NFL, are dropping 40 plus points and holding you the 20 or less, that happened in New Orleans and in Tampa Bay. And if that happens again in Atlanta, there needs to be some serious conversations about the front office and the coaching staff, because yes, Bryce Young does look the part, but Ezero Evero is probably out the door by then. And I don't know, like goes back to a lot of the problems that we had with his front office, that you were a 2-15 team last year and you hired internally.
Doubled the wins already. That'd be my argument.
And our point differential is 19 points worse than last year. And if the Falcons put a beat down on us, like, we're going to be over 200 points negative, in the negative with point differential. We were at 180 last year with Frank Reich and the turnstile at the end with the interims and Thomas Brown being the OC and getting shut out in multiple games. Like you're saying it's gotten worse since then. Like, that's, I understand the win totals doubled, But like, that's crazy.
Yeah. Well, again, we'll review our season in totality more probably definitely during the playoffs, maybe next week. I don't know, but you just got to look back at that defense. And like I was talking about, over 500 points allowed and almost, we're not there yet. That's going to be my take, by the way. And almost 3,000 yards allowed on the ground alone. That's not even counting like Baker throwing to backup tight ends last week and dicing us up. I think Derek Carr probably had a 300 game to start the year.
Rashid Shaheed, I mean, yeah
he Joe like Burrow diced us. Mahomes. Like, I'm just replaying all the games of all the quarterbacks that played well against us. Like Jalen Hurts was the only guy that didn't throw all over the field, but they also have the best running back in the game. With that note, getting into perfect takes, I'm going to mirror the points that I took from Mike Kay's article in the Charlotte Observer. We're going to allow over 500 points this season, our defense. And I think we will get to that over 3,000 yard mark, making us one of the worst defenses in the entire history of modern, I guess not entire history, in the modern history of NFL football. Certainly the worst defense in Panthers history.
Sam Mills is rolling in his grave somewhere. Like I feel really bad for the guy. I mean, this is the state of the roster. This is the state of the team. We used to have an identity on defense. And it really hasn't been here since I want to say what 2020, 2021, back when
I think Phil Snow had an identity. It was speed and athleticism to get around. Like
you go back to that, the Steve Wilkes era.
Then, yeah.
This Zero Evero experiment has not worked. And you got to reset. You got to find somebody that's going to set a tone in there with the guys that they're going to bring in. And hopefully the guys they bring in this year will pan out. But looking at this year's draft class, I mean, I know we're in perfect takes, but outside of what JT Sanders, like Trayvon Wallace might be a good rotational guy coming up, but he hasn't looked like necessarily a superstar. Legette's looked like a project, and Shu Smith-Wade hasn't necessarily been a superstar. He's been solid. But well, like it's those things where you didn't hit anybody really in the draft, and now you're back again almost at square one.
The solace you can take in that is that that was the previous scouting staff that did this past draft. That was from Scott Fitterer and everything. They've hired some new people in there since Dan Morgan's been the guy to take over. So maybe that changes the pro scouting side has changed as well, like free agents and stuff like that. Maybe that'll change. Hopefully it will, because the offensive line additions I thought were good. But yeah, the defense is going to need a complete overhaul and some good luck on the health side. But with that, what is your final take of the regular 2024-2025 regular NFL season?
My final take, as we head into the final week of the regular season, is I think, and we'll get into, I think offensive player of the year, defensive player of the year, rookie of the year is already done. But I think when it's all said and done, and I've been back and forth on this on Twitter, a lot of other commentators and people you hear will be like, Josh Allen or Lamar Jackson, both are worthy of it. But I think what it's going to come down to is the same argument voters got into last year with Lamar. Josh Allen has more wins. And then I think the other thing that's going to be considered is supporting cast. And we had this conversation, I think, last week, but I think Josh Allen has an inferior supporting cast, especially on the offensive side of the ball. And they've put up relatively similar numbers. So that being said, Josh Allen is going to be your 2024 MVP. He's going to win his first one. He's going to take away Lamar Jackson's chance at a record at beating Brett Favre's, at being the fastest to three most valuable player of the year awards. That is my perfect pick.
I will say a little tiny retort with the QB wins argument. It was more so Lamar took the number one seed from Mahomes. This was the first time Mahomes didn't host the AFC championship in his house. I think that was a big part of it as to why he was voted. But I do think Josh Allen not only has a good chance, I think he's the odds on favorite. He has a season that's worthy of it. So you can't be too mad if Josh Allen wins it, if Lamar Jackson wins it. I wouldn't be mad if Saquon Barkley won it. I think you could be mad if Joe Burrow wins it because they won nine. They will have won nine games if he wins it. But I like that one. What's your do you have a defensive player of the year pick before we sign off here? Because I have one and I don't know if you're going to agree.
Like for the longest time, I thought like Xavier McKinney would just keep popping out interceptions and we just hand it to him. But I like at this rate, like I buy the whole best player on one of the best defenses and like what Patrick Surtain, you can't go wrong with that. I mean,
that would be my pick.
Yeah. He's been an island. He's a big reason why the Broncos are a win away from being in the playoffs. So like kudos to him. Like, I think he deserves it.
Yep. Even though TJ Watt somehow is the favorite and he's not top 35 in pressures this season.
He's been the favorite since Aiden Hutchinson went down. Like, I don't know what is getting rigged on the like background. Like, I get he's a great player, but like, sure. I'm not taking him over Myles Garrett or Micah Parsons. Like, you're out of your mind.
Yeah.
Like on that.
Or even Nick Benito this year on the Broncos. He's had an impressive season as well.
He's been good.
Pick sixth, Adonai Mitchell. But I think that's going to be the final note for today's episode. For myself, for Steven, we've been Perfect Takes. Like and follow us on Twitter, YouTube, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, wherever you get your content. Next week, we'll be back to break down the Panthers game, but that'll be the final time we do that up until, what, September? So we're going to be talking a lot more about the postseason, about the draft, about awards, and about free agency up until the draft. So you have to stick with us until then, see how we would improve this team and how the Panthers actually do it. But until then, have a good weekend. Watch some football that's on right now as we're recording and keep pounding.